Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca.
We're talking this morning with Jared Hogue, who is the president at Clatsop Community College, and Ed Johnson, who is the chair of the college board. And we'll be talking about issues the college is facing, adjustments they're having to make, and what it looks like for the college's future. So I'm assuming that at the base of the current problems is funding. What is causing the current funding problems the college is having, or is it a myriad of things?
Yeah, in higher education in Oregon, I think what you see is a lot of colleges that are reducing budgets statewide. You see it at Portland State, you see it at Southern Oregon University, Lane Community College, Portland Community College. One of the challenges we have is that our costs are rising faster than our state funding. So about 30% of our funding comes from the state of Oregon under what it's called the Community College Support Fund. And for us, that is a piece of the pie across the state. So every community college gets their piece of pie based on their enrollment, which we call full-time equivalency. So one full-time student is the same as two half-time students. And that state apportionment or state funding has not grown the same at a level that our costs have. And so the last 3 years, and this is my second year going through the budgeting process, where it's just the reality of the revenue that the college is budgeting for does not meet our costs. And so, of course, with a community college, about 88% of our costs are staffing. And so usually that to meet budget and to present our board chair here, Ed, with a balanced budget, we usually have to do a little trimming of staff. And so this is the third straight year we've needed to do that to present a balanced budget.
What are the other sources of funding the college has? You said that's about a third from the
yep.
state.
So 40%, around 40%, these are rough numbers, around 40% is property tax.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Clatsop County property taxpayers. That is been a little more stable for us. It's been pretty consistent if you look at the last 8 to 10 years. And then about 20% is tuition, tuition and fees. And so that's a smaller portion. And that's the whole idea of the community college, is that they're supposed to be affordable. And we do a pretty good job of that, I think. So about 20, 30, 40, and then the other 10% is things like interests and timber revenue and things like that.
Is there federal grants in any way involved or no?
Yeah, we have several federal programs. We have our TRIO program, which one supports current college students and another one supports high school students that are planning for college. So we get two federal grants. We also have a STEP grant, and I'm not going to tell you what the acronym is, but it's basically supporting students that are currently receiving food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
It's a federal STEP grant, is another federal source of money. Part of our SBA, or Small Business Development Center, is funded through the SBA. So we get some federal funding. And then, of course, financial aid and Pell grants, those are all financial finances coming, funding coming from the feds. So, but not as part of our general fund necessarily. Mm-hmm. Our general fund is property taxes, state appropriations, and tuition.
So as a result of the funding shortage, you are faced with some needs to make adjustments to reduce your expenses. How do you decide who and what to cut? And is that something that you do as college president, or is it a committee action, or is the board involved?
Yeah, I mean, we think of it as resource allocation. So we have this pot of resources that we allocate based on, one, our mission at the college. What is our core function? And that's educating. And then, what is the use? What is the demand from students? How it works is we get together as a leadership team. And in the last couple of years, we've come together and said, okay, so we have our essential services that can't go away, right? We're a teaching institution. We want to maintain our teaching and learning as much as possible. And then we have things that are the what I've termed the really nice to have. And then we have some other programs and services. So we had to kind of prioritize what our core mission is. And then when we look at some of our services, like our campus store, our library, our Patriot Hall, which is very valued by the community, we look at what is our cost to do that. Are there areas that we can save? And so, for example, with our Patriot Hall, it's a very valued service for the community. We wanted to maintain those hours. And so we said, how can we look at our model where we have someone that's coordinating a lot of the events at Patriot Hall and take that more campus-wide instead of having areas and pockets of different services going on, more a coordinated area. So that's just one example. So we have a budget. We'd come together, you know, an initial draft budget. We realized that this year there was $700,000 that we needed to cut for next year. And so we take that to our board and our budget committee for review and approval. And then, of course, the difficult work is where we have to implement that. And unfortunately, as I said, a staffing-heavy organization, that usually means staff cuts.
Well, Ed, can you talk a little bit about the board's role in this? How does the board figure into what's going on?
Sure. You know, all up to the budget committee part, you know, all the deciding, Jared and his staff, you know, are the ones that look at what's the effects on the students and all that stuff he talked about. So we don't get involved until the budget committee. And, you know, we did approve the budget after our first budget committee meeting. And then again, that budget comes to the board for implementation, and we decide finally, is that what we want, or are we going to change things?
So this is a traditional relationship where Jared is the CEO, and, you know, the president. He and his staff are actually running the institution. The board is the policy body.
Exactly. We're not getting in the weeds.
You're deciding what the overall policies should be for the college, and then it's Jared's job to implement those policies.
Right.
Well, you mentioned Patriot Hall, and I'm not sure everyone understands that along with students who are pursuing different things, the community uses the college as well. You know, we have programs that we can take part in. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Yeah, we have, for the community, there's access to our, if you haven't been to Patriot Hall, it's a really wonderful facility that was built, I think about 10 years ago, I don't know the exact date, but it has a track, it has a basketball court, it has, you know, fitness facilities, it has classrooms for yoga and different types of exercise classes. And so we host a variety of events to the community. We host, things like fundraisers. We do our own foundation fundraiser there. High schools participate sometimes when they have a conflict and they need a gym, they'll rent our facility. So it's really accessible. It's a real asset. It's probably the best view from any gym that you will ever see.
I agree with that.
So it's a wonderful building, but you know, as you know, community colleges are that. They're the community's college, and there's a general expectation that some of our facilities and classes should be accessible, not just to the credit and degree seeking students, but also to the public in general. And so that comes with a lot of expectations and sometimes pressure and pushback. They'll want more hours often. And sometimes the different groups will want to have access at different times that sometimes might conflict with what we have going on in programs. So it's definitely can be a battle, in, so to speak, in trying to make sure that we're serving the community well. One thing I would say is it's our kind of gem on our campus, Patriot Hall. And we enjoy the interaction with the community. And I have to say, you know, 95% of the people that come and use it are really thankful and will even stop me and say, do you realize how wonderful this facility is? So it's something we want to keep going and continue to offer.
Well, I want to talk a little bit specifically about some of the cuts you've had to make, but before we do that, can you tell us a little about the student body itself? What percentage of the student body, for example, is doing college prep, or they're going to go on to a four-year institution? What percent are there doing other kinds of things,
yeah,
like vocational training.
Yeah, roughly of our credit or degree-seeking students, about half of them are lower division transfer, so they're planning on transferring to the university, and about half are, a little over half, are seeking a career technical, Associate of Applied Science, so a nursing degree, mm-hmm. a welding degree, or a welding certificate. We also, it's not just two-year degrees, we offer one-year certificates. We try to embed some industry certificates along the way in their training. And then usually about 200 to 300 people from the community that are regularly taking community education classes. So those mm-hmm. are those non-credit courses, you know, anywhere from, you know, writing your memoirs to, you know, learning how to do some type of art. So a lot of students that from the community that want to just come and learn something new, some type of enrichment, music, those kind of things.
So the programs that have had to be cut right now, obviously the Historic Preservation Program is one that is being talked about a bit, but there also is the automobile technology, and the third one was CAD design and drafting, computer aided.
Yeah, so I kind of have to break those into two different categories. So with our automotive program, what we're doing is putting a hole on it while we reinvent and in some ways bring industry back in to tell us how can we better meet their needs. The thing that you have to think about when you offer a 1 or 2 year program is that once you start a student, you're on the hook to teach out for the 2 years, so offer all the courses for the entire 2 years for that student. And so with automotive, what we want to do is just put a pause and take some time to reinvest and modernize what we're doing to make sure we're meeting the needs of the automotive sector, the automotive technician. We want to get we have three major dealers here, Lums, Ocean Crest, and Ford. We want to get them back at the table and say, how can we meet the needs? You used to be involved in our program. You're not as much anymore. Mm-hmm. We want to bring you back and find out how we can better align our program outcomes with your needs for your hiring. So that's one piece of this is we're pausing automotive. With historic preservation and CAD, it's just the number of students have been really low for the last 7 or 8 years. We looked at the data. I think historic preservation has one graduate in the last 4 years. And so what we've realized is there's a small handful of students that are there, you know, 3 to 4 students that are interested in it as a degree program, and they want to make that progression and go into some type of historic preservation career. And then you have about another 3 or 4 students that are interested in the subject of that particular class. Maybe it's restoring windows or building materials or some of the community projects are around. Unfortunately, I think the reality is, as a community college, we're often expected to do a lot of things, and this is really just, we can't continue to do everything. And this is one of the programs that had probably annually some of the smallest enrollments. Mm-hmm. And what I've tried to say to some of the advocates for their program is we can still do classes, we can still do programming. It's the 2 year degree program that really puts the college on the hook, because for 2 years we have to offer all those courses, whether there's one student or 4 or 6, and that's financial. It's just tough for us to do. And the same thing with CAD. It's we offer CAD classes to our welding students, and we're going to continue to do that, but offering is a 2 year program. We're right now with CAD and historic preservation making a recommendation to the board, because the board ultimately gets to make the decision whether to continue or discontinue a program. Mm-hmm. So we're going to present a recommendation to the board to sunset those programs. And so we're not required to continue to maintain the two-year program. And so what I've also said is, as people are, there's a small segment of people that are really passionate about historic preservation. And what I have to say is, as a CEO, as you said, who's trying to think about how we allocate our resources, is like, this can continue to be your passion project. Please keep doing those awesome projects, but the college should not be on the hook to pay for those. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the situation it is. It's not like something I want to say. I wish we weren't in this situation, but I mean, the reality is we just have very few students in the program.
The students that are in the program now, what happens to them?
Well, yeah, good question. We're obligated to teach out the degrees. So the both our state higher education coordinating commission and our accreditors require us to come up with a what we call a teach out plan. So that means even if you say we're not going to enroll new students, the students in the program get a pathway to finish if they choose to do so. And we're required to offer those.
Let's talk a little bit, if we can, about vocational training. How able is the college to meet demands like that? We know, for example, just off the top of my head, in our region, we are short of tradesmen. We are short of construction people. We are very, very short. We all know, if we've lived here for a while, that if you want some construction work done, be prepared to wait. Not just for the permits, but just for the people who will do it. Can the college have a role in that?
Absolutely. In fact, it's good timing because we're a finalist through the Murdoch Foundation to launch a new construction program. What we've found is there is an interest and a demand, a workforce demand for people in the trades. We're a small enough demographic, and I have to explain this a lot to people that come from bigger areas of the state. We're a small enough demographic. I don't think we'll be able to ever be a niche, an electrical necessarily, but we can do broader trades training. And part of this funding that we're looking at from the Murdoch Foundation is would seed a program to do construction, commercial construction, project management, and do a better job of filling the construct, because you're right, construction is one of the areas and trades is one of the areas that there seems to be, and all the projections I've seen is those trades will continue to grow in the future. So we've got to be able to respond. The difficult part is using our limited dollars is when you launch a new program, you've got to fund the equipment, you've got to fund the full-time faculty, and that quickly gets up into the $200,000-$300,000 per year. And so we've got to be able to lean on industry and some of our donors to help us in those type of ventures.
I was going to ask, companies that need those trades can have a part in financing the training of those people, can they not? Or is that something new?
Well, my feeling is if you don't have industry partners that are part of your program, you don't have a good program, because you want those industry partners, you want them offering equipment, tools, you want them hiring, you want them at the table at your advisory committees, you want them donating to the program, you want them advising the faculty on the outcomes. And so you really need to have a good career technical education program. You really have to have good industry partners that are along for the ride. They just have better outcomes.
Well, you mentioned earlier the auto dealers in the area that have kind of drifted away. And so from the college's part, you need to be offering training that's currently viable, because cars are changing. But what you need from the auto industry is that they support it.
100%, yeah. And I came from a college where we had factory certifications. And so you had like Ford that was subsidizing or supporting the training, committing to hiring their graduates. And so we had students that were guaranteed jobs before they even finished. And that's where I want to get to, is that the students in the program are sought after by the industry folks. That's when you know you're doing a good job, is when they can't wait for that person to graduate because they want to hire them before they get out the door. We're not there yet. So that's another example of, you know, program outcomes are so important. And the other piece of that is when you have really good program outcomes and you're aligned with industry demand, you get more students, because students see the good things that are happening, like what's happening with our nursing program. All those nursing graduates are going to work and they're making good wages.
Well, here you had some good success with the welding program too, doing an accelerated sort of welding program. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
So before my time, there was some industry partners. I think it was WCT and Bergeson, mm-hmm. and some folks that wanted to see us do more aluminum welding, I believe. And so, yeah, we got some donations to upgrade equipment at a part-time faculty so that we could do some more evening training. And so that's been a success. I had a good conversation with our full-time welding faculty, who said the best part about those donations is we are now producing better welders because they're working on better equipment and better materials. So, yeah, I think that was a good collaboration.
Well, it should be said, too, that those are the kinds of jobs that pay pretty well when you get into construction and welding and those kinds of things. So it's a way for a young person to, if an academic career or if going on to a four-year college isn't going to be their cup of tea, it's a way they still can get a good job. And and if the program is working the way you'd like it to, with a job sitting there at the end of it.
It's really important. And one of the things we continue to look at, we have access to some very cool digital tools that show us labor market demand, expected hires in the next 5 to 10 years, average salary, starting salary. And so we're really able to hone in on program outcomes that are going to meet the needs of the student and the community. So without those tools, it would be very hard for us and kind of anecdotal, which we don't want, right?
You know, those kinds of jobs like welding and other construction jobs are not likely to be affected a whole lot by AI, whereas some other jobs are. Can you talk a little bit about that? Is AI affecting what the college is doing or what it's trying to teach?
I think it has us all trying to figure out, you know, how to put our finger on it because it's moving so quickly. And you're right, there's always going to be a need for people to move and fix and build things as far as we understand. I think the things that are going to go away are kind of like the business analytics, the financial, the generating of information that have traditionally been done by people is going to be less and less. But yeah, I think we're always going to need someone to take care of people who are sick. We're always going to need someone to fabricate things. I know there's robotic welders, but even that, I think what you'll see is people that are well trained that are overseeing those processes and kind of ensuring the quality. So even if AI gets to the level where, this is my opinion, even if AI gets to the level where it's doing all the driving and the fabrication and the building, which some say will come, you're going to need some people that are knowledgeable in the field that will be able to oversee it, ensure it's the quality and the safety and all those kind of things.
It's kind of a frightening concept in a way, actually.
Yes, it is.
So what do you hope, Ed, I'm going to drag you back in for this. What do you hope for going forward? What do you see as the future of the college? Where are we heading with this?
Could I even go a little wider?
You can.
I spent 28 years on the K-12 board in Napa and Clatskanie. Yeah, it's not just the college, it's the K-12 is in the same. And every year you look, you know, Astoria this year's cutting, what, a million? Some odd, Napa's cutting, everybody's cutting.
Yeah.
And just from a philosophical standpoint, Oregon needs to value education more than we do. At the K-12 level, I think we're ranked like 38, 39, something like that, out of the states for funding.
Yeah.
48th or 49th, I think. It's way down at the bottom.
Way down.
Yeah, and so just as a society, you know, education should be a cornerstone of what we do. And, you know, somehow as a state, we need to recognize that.
Well, and if K-12 is struggling, that's going to work its way all the way up through the system,
yep.
And that's not something you can repair at the college level necessarily.
Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
And we're already seeing projections of what some have termed an enrollment cliff, where there are fewer, you know, people are having fewer and fewer kids, and there are projected to be less systems in the K-12 system, less students in the K-12 system, and how that'll affect higher ed, we don't know yet, but could be an opportunity for us to also engage more with folks that are incumbent workers and dislocated workers and adults already in the community to get them retrained.
Well, what's going to bring about this change? Is it us as citizens of the community putting pressure on the political forces in the community to make those changes and to increase funding?
That's what I'm thinking, that, you know, we as the citizens, we need to let our legislators know what's important to the state, and educating our children is, you know, like I said, it's the cornerstone of what we do. And if we don't get on board on that and encourage them to fund these things properly, It isn't going to get better. It's going to get worse.
Right. We can't wait for someone else to come and rescue us or rescue this.
Absolutely.
It's up to us as members of the community to advocate and be persistent about advocating for education.
Yep.
Because I can't think of anything else that's more affected with our future overall than having our kids educated.
Sure.
What else would you like the community to know about Clatsop Community College that I haven't asked about?
Well, I just kick in. One is that, when you ask about what's the board's involvement in this plan and stuff, and, it makes our job as board members a whole lot easier if we have confidence in the information that we're getting is accurate. And that was shown this year with the budget committee, where we passed the budget in one meeting, as in past years, where we go on for 2, 3, and 4 meetings to get a budget approved. So I just welcome what Jared has done for this college, and I think that whether it survives, having him as our president is a key to that.
So what would you like to add?
Well, I would just say, one of the things when I came in, there had been some turmoil in leadership and at the board, and then some financial turmoil, some downgrading of credit, and some headlines in the newspaper about some of the finances. And I want to draw a kind of a stark contrast between making budget cuts to be sustainable versus some of the things that were maybe happening before. So one of the, we've put a lot of energy and thought into keeping our budget sustainable. And so some of these cuts you're hearing about, while they don't sound good in headlines, they are us managing our resources. And so one thing I want to say is, we had this thing called a composite financial index, which looks at how colleges use their resources, how they're saving, how they're saving reserves. And we've gone from really not meeting standards to now it's called a 3.0, which is the healthy standard for the composite financial index. And so though you might hear headlines occasionally if we have to make some cuts or reduce some services, overall the institutional health has been the best it's been in 5 years. And so I just want to say that, because unfortunately, when you hear of some cuts or people losing their jobs, it kind of turns into this, the college is going away, or that we're going to close the library, or some nonsense like that. And I just really want to make it clear, it's just us doing the best we can with the resources that we have, and we have to make some tough decisions. But the goal is, we're not deficit spending. We have an adequate beginning and ending fund balances, and those are the things that are really important to maintain the long-term sustainability of the organization.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jared Hogue, President, and Ed Johnson, Board Chair at Clatsop Community College. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is The Human Beat. Thanks for listening. I'm Roger Rucka.